Welcome to another episode of Downtime at the Cranston Public Library, a podcast for cool people who love libraries, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been loving. I'm your host, Taylor, the librarian at the Oaklawn Branch Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
I am Corey Alves. I'm the technology coordinator for the Cranston Public Library system, and my pronouns are she and her.
And I'm Karen McGrath. I'm the Auburn Branch Librarian, and my pronouns are she, her.
Welcome back, both of you, to the show. I'm very excited to have you.
Thank you.
I'm particularly excited because I brought you both here for your expertise on cookbooks, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. But before we get to cookbooks, why don't we jump in with what you both have been currently reading?
Well, let's see. I have been reading a lot of summer romance fiction things. One of my new favorite authors is Jenny Colgan, who is English, Scotland and London, so British, let's say. One of my sisters also loves her stuff. She just came out with two new ones. And so my sister and I have both been enjoying them. One of them is called 500 Miles From You. And that title is taken from the Proclaimers song. Do y'all remember the Proclaimers song? I would walk 500 miles. I have not had that song out of my head for days and days and days. I had to go back to YouTube and watch the video. The Proclaimers are identical twin brothers. I had to watch the video from YouTube where that song is part of the movie Benny and June. Are any of you old enough to remember the movie Benny and June with Johnny Depp? But it's a fabulous movie. Really, Johnny Depp being as quirky as possible. I'm going to have to look it up now. And that song just runs in and out of that entire movie. And it's just, my sister is also singing the same thing.
It's a catchy tune.
Yeah. Oh, it's Aidan Quinn, Mary Stuart Masterson, and Johnny Depp.
Mary Stuart Masterson.
Oh. Yeah. So
the Proclaimers are Scottish.
Yes. Yeah. And the author took the title of the book from that song. The premise of the book is it's two nurses, one in the Highlands in Scotland and one in London in like an emergency ward and going out and doing home visits for aftercare. The woman in London has basically PTSD because she's witnessed something horrible. And so the National Health Service switches her with this man who's a nurse up in this tiny village in the Highlands, which is the site of two previous books by the author. And a lot of the story of the book is told in text messages back and forth about their patients because they've traded caseloads. And then, of course, there's a romance that develops. It's a lot of fun.
It sounds like a lot of fun. And you said there were two. Is there another one of her books that you want to talk about?
The other one that was the one that I read right before that is called, let's see, I will find it in just a second. Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, I think. But let me, yes, Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. About a 20-something girl from a very wealthy, self-made family. These are both contemporary. And all of a sudden, she gets cut off without a penny by her father because she's been spending money like crazy and not really working and has to find herself and ends up sharing a flat in South London with four guys. And she can't afford the rent. She can barely afford crisps or, you know, potato chips and is living on old oatmeal and whatnot. And she's having to clean the apartment for the four guys because she can't pay her full share of the rent. And it's how she grows up. You know, she's in her late 20s, but she's finally growing up. And it's a neighborhood in London that I kind of am familiar with. So that's a lot of fun because she's talking about places that I've been. So I always enjoy that.
It sounds like the show New Girl.
I don't know that show, so you'll have to tell me what that is.
It's Zoe Deschanel. And the impetus for her moving in with three guys is not in responsible spending, but because her romantic relationship at the very beginning of the series like collapses. And so she has nowhere to live. And so she finds this apartment listing, and then it's all like weird happenstance of why the other guys aren't moving out, even though she's moving in. And so she ends up just living with these three guys, and all craziness ensues. She gets romantically involved with one of the guys. She like helps the other two guys with their romantic stuff. And it's a very fun show.
And that sounds a lot like the plot of this. Two of them are art students, but you know, one of them is an art student after he'd been like an accountant. And one is in the army, and he uses the place kind of as a crash pad before he's, you know, sent off to Afghanistan or whatever. And then one of them, they just call Wolverine, and he only grunts and never really has a whole lot of dialogue anywhere in the book. And they sort of treat him like the family pet. And then she's got two mean girl girlfriends who are like Kardashian sisters. So it's how, when they find out what she's doing, how she's come down in the world and where she's living and how they're treating her, and yet they're supposed to be her best friends. So it's all that sort of stuff, but it's a lot of fun.
It sounds like a lot of fun. A read-alike if you like New Girl. So how about you, Corey? What have you been reading?
I just finished Your Diet by Chloe Hilliard. She's a 30-something, and she has struggled with her weight from a young age, and she's sort of tried it all, pills and starvation and workouts, and kind of done some yo-yo dieting. And she's just sort of looking at different things culturally, and reasons why the culture is the way that it is. And, you know, it was very funny. She had a funny voice. She does stand-up comedy. She started out in journalism, and now she makes her living doing stand-up comedy. So it has a funny, you know, it's a light, easy read. And at the same time, it sort of tackles subjects that are interesting and sort of meaningful. So, you know, she's kind of looking at her own relationship with food and where that came from. So
is it just like a commentary on like American diet culture, or is there like some type of like self-help solution alternative in the book?
No, it's more just learning, you know, how to, you know, as somebody, for example, she's on the road a lot doing comedy, and it's how hard it is to eat healthy when you're on the road. And, you know, trying to eat clean is what she calls it. And just, you know, growing up eating fast food and all of that. So it was more just learning to accept herself and talking about that journey, but also a lot of just different critique at the culture. So I enjoyed that. So that was nonfiction, so not a cookbook, but sort of food related. And then I've been reading a graphic novel that is also nonfiction, and I just picked that up with our new books, and it's The Thrilling Adventures of Lovelace and Babbage. And it's about Ada Lovelace and Charles Babbage, who designed what is now considered the first computer. And I just started that. So that is sort of a quick read, nonfiction, probably not something I would read if it was a traditional book, but in the graphic novel form, I picked that up and gave that a try.
That's the one thing I love about graphic novels, is like graphic novels have gotten me to read way more nonfiction than I normally would have, whether it's like graphic memoir or just informational graphic novels. It's definitely, I'm way more willing to read nonfiction in that format than traditional nonfiction, which could just
be me. It can be a little dry, yeah. I can say the same for, I was a youth services librarian at the beginning of my career, and I learned so many things from children's nonfiction and just kind of picking those things up and got a lot from those.
Yeah, I just recently read Meditation for Kids, with to kind of inform myself about meditation and get some ideas for some simple meditation and mindfulness exercises. And yeah, it was great. It explained everything I needed to know about it without too much that I didn't need to know. It gave me a lot of practical exercises to try. So it was great. I was like, this is perfect. I don't need to read, like, obviously I'll read more on the subject, but I don't need to read like this big adult nonfiction about meditation just to learn something.
Yeah, children's nonfiction is fabulous. I read it a lot. Always have.
I think sometimes people think that we judge them for going into other parts of the library. It's like, there's no judgment because we go in all parts of the library and read everything. So if you want to go in the kids' room or in the teen room or area of a library as an adult to read that, go for it, because we're not judging you. We're right there with you.
I'm definitely guilty of reading some of my kids' summer reading, too. I looked at their summer reading list, and there's books about that I read right up. Puppies, Dogs, and Blue Northers by Gary Paulsen, and Wood Song by Gary Paulsen. They're fabulous, and I had never read those. You know, I have to say that growing up reading, I didn't read a ton of Gary Paulsen for whatever reason, and but of course I know his name because he's so prolific. But yeah, it brought a tear to my eye. He talks all about his sled dogs and his relationships with his sled dogs and training for the Iditarod, which is pretty intense. To say the least. And he lives in Minnesota and trains his sled dogs there.
What always grossed me out, but was the hook where I'd get boys into reading, that was, and I'm not sure which one, but it was one of the nonfiction ones where he talks about training the sled dogs, that it was, when you're running the Iditarod, it's not possible to consume enough calories because you're burning so many calories. And so he would eat sticks of frozen margarine like lollipops to get enough calories in, which just the thought appalls me. But the boys were like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Maybe I'll try that.
Yeah, those facts will always draw the boys in. I think it was Gary Paulsen who wrote an anecdote in another collection of stories aimed toward boys. And it was all about what happened when he peed on an electric fence. So he only did it once, but you know, that'll definitely draw them in. So that, but there was none of that. No peeing on electric fences in this. It was all, I'm a dog person, and it was just all about his dogs and their individual personalities. And you know, there was one dog in particular that was very special, and he had a relationship with. So yeah, I admit I shed a tear at the end, but I still haven't gotten my kids to read it. But I enjoyed it very much. So
well, the summer's almost over. They better get on it.
They will. They will. I'll tell them that you said so. They're giving me a look right now as we say that. But
yes, tell them the nice woman who works at Oaklawn Library that you met said that you should do your summer reading.
Time to do that summer reading. It's on the record now, kid.
I'm still in the middle of another book that I talked about previously, but recently the book that I most recently finished was called Lost Stars, and it's one of the Star Wars novels. It's one of the Star Wars YA novels. And so my boyfriend actually read it to me, so we kind of like read it together, and I didn't realize that as an adult how wonderful being read to is. So if I have any advice for anyone, it's don't stop getting read to, because it's great. So we were able to go through it together and talk about it, because we're both like, he had read it before, I was experiencing it for the first time. So that was also a dynamic where I would like, we'd finish a chapter and I would be like, if this happens, I'm gonna be upset. and then it seemed like something worse would happen, but it still was a very interesting book. It was about two young people who both end up going to the Empire Academy and training to be part of the Empire, but it's because they've been fed the propaganda about the Empire since they were kids. So going into it, they think that that's like the thing to do and the best course of action. That would give them a good life and a good career, and they'd be doing something noble. And it's kind of both of them actually getting into the Empire and serving it and figuring out that it wasn't like that, and both of them, who are very different personalities, coming to terms with that and how they deal with it. It was really interesting and very different from a lot of things that I've read, and very different, I feel like, than most Star Wars stories that end up on screen. I don't know if I would have necessarily picked it up if he hadn't suggested that we read it, and so, but I was very happy that I did, because I did enjoy it, and it was really interesting.
Well, and having, you know, you sitting in as an adult and listening to him read, is sort of a very pre-television era thing to be doing. You know, all of those 19th century novels, everybody sits around after dinner and somebody's reading out a chapter to everybody else in the room. You know, it was a common communal activity.
Yeah, I think you know,
reading wasn't necessarily solitary.
I think I mentioned to him one time. I was like, oh my God, it'll be like we're in the Jane Austen
exactly.
novel. And he's like, what? And I was like, in like Pride and Prejudice, where like the cousin comes over and then after dinner they have to listen to him read the Bible and it's like the worst thing ever. You don't remember that?
Yeah. And you have to take a turn about the room. They totally lived in their living rooms in a way that we don't today.
Well, I mean, a way that we kind of recently just did, but before that,
don't. True.
I think we could learn something from the 19th century about being in lockdown.
That's true.
You take turns about the room and you make reading a communal activity and that's how you get through.
Yeah.
Having to stay in your house.
And you're doing a lot of cooking and baking at home too.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, if you don't have servants, of course.
So speaking of ways that we've been entertaining ourselves, what have you guys been watching?
So this makes me feel really old to say, but I have found myself hooked on Perry Mason. I remember there being a Perry Mason on TV when I was a kid, and it seemed like something, you know, your grandparents watched, and I had no interest in it. But HBO has revived the Perry Mason investigator turned lawyer. And of course, it's HBO, so it's a little bit edgier than I think the one that was on when I was a kid was, but I just watched the whole series and I really enjoyed it. It's set in 1932 Los Angeles, and he's kind of a down on his luck private investigator, and then of course a case. In this case, it's a child that has been kidnapped and murdered. So it was very interesting, and yeah, Perry Mason. It's it sounds like old lady TV, but I'm into it. So
no, there's a lot of love for crime dramas.
Throwback to my childhood. I watched the original version.
Yeah, there's been a few.
My dad loved it.
It's great. Maybe I obviously discounted it too soon, and I should kind of go back and check the other ones. But that was. Maybe I'm sort of finding my way into the crime novels a little late because that has not always been my first choice. But you're right that it's popular.
Yeah, I feel like on this podcast alone, even outside of us having two crime novelists on the show, a lot of people have talked about a lot of different things that they enjoy watching.
I just remember when I was a kid, I read a lot of the Nancy Drews, and I can remember walking up and down my sidewalk in the suburbs and sort of waiting for some sort of mystery to jump in front of me for me to solve, and it never did happen. So I think that disappointment just put me off the genre for a while.
I always wanted to know what a roadster was from the Nancy Drew books.
Did you ever find out?
Yes, later on I did. I had an uncle who collected classic cars, and he actually ended up with one. So it was quite thrilling for us.
Oh, okay.
And what is a roadster? Is it a specific type of car?
Just a sporty car. I couldn't tell you. I'm so not a car person at all. I couldn't even tell you what it was. You know, he had a Model T fire truck that we really liked, and I remember that. But the cars... One was a saloon car, an opera car, something like that. It was meant for an old lady who had a driver, and in the back seat there was a little glass face so you could carry a nosegay in the back seat where you were sitting, sort of. But I couldn't tell you what any of them were now, except for that Model T fire truck.
That would make an impression. Not everybody's uncle has their own fire truck. That like buys you cool uncle status.
Yeah, it had a gravity, catch this, it was a fire truck, but it had a gravity feed engine. So it had to back up hills because the gas tank was at the back of the truck. And so you had to be going where the gas tank was higher than the engine. So he would bring it here to what was then my summer house, which is in a little valley between two little hills. And he would have to back it up one hill and kind of get a running start to make it up the other hill. It's pretty amazing when you think about it.
It was a different time back then. People had special cars just to go to the opera in and to carry their nosegays.
So, Karen, I know you've said before that you're not much of a TV person, but do you have any more music?
Yeah, I've been watching lots of music, mostly on Facebook Live concerts and some YouTube video things. Jay Unger and Molly Mason. Jay wrote The Ashokan Farewell, which was the soundtrack kind of woven all the way through Ken Burns' Civil War series. But he actually wrote it about Ashokans, a music and dance camp in upstate New York, in the Catskills. And so every Wednesday night, they have been doing a concert they call From the Quiet Room. And between the two of them, they're playing fiddle, banjo, fiddle, mandolin, guitar, piano, and just gorgeous tunes, many of which he's written, but not all of them. And then she'll sing, but they also do a lot of sort of jazzy swing sort of things. It's just a wonderful evening. So I'll be sitting and sewing, and I'll have that on. Rhythm and Roots Festival is not happening this weekend, Labor Day weekend, but they have announced they're having a full weekend of videos from previous years with an amazing lineup. Ed, doesn't that look incredible, Corey?
I was especially excited to see that they included Shiny Ribs, who I saw at Rhythm and Roots a couple of years ago, and definitely have followed since then. And his live streams got me through the pandemic at the worst of it. And so I was excited. I'll definitely be tuning into that.
Yeah, a huge variety, and it's going to be running, like 5 p.m. or something on Friday till 11 p.m. And then, 1 o'clock Saturday till 11 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, approximately. I might have those times slightly wrong, but that's an astounding musical lineup. So I'm very excited and looking forward to that.
There's
another big concert coming up that I'll be watching. I've watched the two previous ones. Folk on Foot is a podcast in England where this guy goes out and interviews folk musicians in England, and he walks with them. But some of them are really interesting. And what they've done is, this will be on Bank Holiday Monday, which is a week from this Monday, I think. It's going to be like a 7-hour concert, half-hour pre-recorded sets by a whole bunch of pretty famous British folkies. The pandemic has really hit musicians horribly and hit venues horribly because their income is just shut down. So the way the festival works is half of the donations go to the musicians who have done the actual concerts, and then the other half goes to people can apply for grants. And the last concert, they raised money and they provided like 500 pound grants to something like 14,000 musicians in England. Amazing numbers, and just great concerts. Really interesting. A lot of people that I had never heard of before who, I've got to invest in some of their music. Others, old favorites of mine. So I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah, I miss some live music quite a bit. And I know that, just like you mentioned, a lot of the venues are struggling, and there are historic venues that may close down, and that I hope that does not happen. And so it is important to try and save them, and hopefully live music will be a thing again. There's a band that I like called the Avett Brothers, and they're going to be doing a drive-in concert where people drive in. So they're going to be experimenting with that in North Carolina, where they're from. But I would go to one if it was nearby, but it's different.
That's one of the more interesting things that's happened, is all of drive-in theaters around the country that are doing that sort of thing, doing drive-in concerts and, drive-in weddings and drive-in graduations. As a safe way to be together, but distanced safely.
Yeah, it's a different energy when it's live, would you agree? So
yes.
A show that's live, or something that you're watching streaming, versus something that is pre-recorded. I think it is that feeling that other people who are watching with you at the same time.
Exactly. And I mean, I think all of these musicians are living in such isolation. They're so used to being out in front of, you know, large quantities of people. And I think this has been really hard for them. And so by the fact, you know, they can see that people still remember who they are because they're tuning in from literally around the world.
Yeah, the artists need an audience too.
Exactly.
And we'll return to the show after a quick break.
Looking for another way to keep up with what's going on at the Cranston Public Library? Sign up for our email newsletter. You'll be among the first to learn about upcoming programs for kids, teens, and adults, and new services and collections coming to your library. Subscribe at cranstonlibrary.org.
Udemy is an online learning platform for adults who want to improve work-related skills or further develop a personal interest. Users can search through more than 4,000 continuously updated on-demand video courses across 75 categories in business, technology, design, and more. All courses are taught by world-class instructors and offer a tailor-made learning experience for those who want to learn new technologies and skills to stay competitive in a changing workforce. All you need to get started is your library card and a Google or Microsoft account. You can find more information about how to sign up for Udemy at cranstonlibrary.org by clicking the link that says online resources you can use now.
Well, without further ado, because I know you both have many cookbook recommendations to give, let's jump right into it. Let's talk about some of our favorite cookbooks.
As you mentioned earlier, I'm hosting the cookbook club at the Central Library, which I started doing in the fall, and it's wonderful. We pick a cookbook, and everyone chooses a different recipe from the cookbook, and then we would come together, usually on a Tuesday or Wednesday night around 5:30, and sit down and eat dinner together and talk about the recipes that we liked and didn't like. And you know, it had only been a few months that we'd been meeting. I want to say we went about 5 months before everything got shut down. But it was a great group of people, and it was always really interesting to see what worked and what didn't work and what substitutions people used. And everybody is a foodie and like to talk about food and things like that. So that's one thing that we've missed when we closed down and couldn't have programs. So I'm experimenting with reviving it, but as a virtual meeting. So we're going to pick a different cookbook every month and cook different recipes and then have a virtual meeting where we talk about them. The sad part is that we don't get to try a whole bunch of different recipes from the cookbooks. That was kind of the really great part about it, was all the delicious food. But we're going to be meeting virtually on September 23rd at 3 p.m. So if anybody is interested in coming to that, they can just contact me and we can get that all worked out. And the book that we're going to do in September is Modern Potluck, Beautiful Food to Share, which is sort of ironic because we're not having potluck so much anymore. But, you know, it was the book that we were going to do before everything shut down. And just in a spirit of optimism, we will do that.
All right, so Corey shared about the modern potluck. So, Karen, what's one of your picks?
The newest addition to the library collection is a book that I just donated. One of the things that I missed out on this summer was going to the Augusta Heritage Center down in West Virginia to Cajun Creole Week and take a Cajun cooking class that I've done every year for eons with my friend Jackie Miller, who I met there. Jackie's a cook and a standard bearer for Cajun traditions from a tiny little town called Iota, Louisiana. And she'd written a cookbook 1999, so 21 years ago, called Jackie's Collection for You, Cajun Cooking from Momo to Mama. Momo was her mother-in-law. That's what the grandchildren called her. And it's interesting because it is divided into two sections. One is the way they used to cook and the way, and then the way we cook today. So it's sort of more historic recipes and then more the way they're cooking today. Now, having said that, I'm a vegetarian. So there's not a lot from Jackie's cookbook that I actually eat, because there's, you know, chicken sauce piquante with smoked sausage, or pork or beef jambalaya, or catfish coubillon, catfish sauce piquante. I mean, it's a lot of things that I don't eat, but I like a lot of the little side notes and history that she gives. She gives a lot of traditions from that part of the world for the Acadians. And then there are these little boxed off things like, if you let someone sweep under your feet, you would never marry. Or while washing dishes, if you dropped a spoon, it meant a woman was coming to visit. If you dropped a fork, it meant that a man was coming to visit. Or if a rooster would sing on the steps, it meant that company was coming. And they're just, you know, and those were things that she collected from the grandmothers and aunties and, you know, the older women in her community. She's got some fabulous dessert recipes in here that I make often. There's a syrup cake, which is syrup would be Steen's cane syrup, which is kind of like a molasses. So it's like a spice cake. There's a fig cake that I make that you use canned figs for, and Jackie has fig trees. So I have been lucky to have been graced more than once with jars of her canned figs. And when I bring them to parties or dances, people never know what it is that they're eating, because the figs get all chopped up at the mixer, and it has a hot buttermilk icing poured on it that all just kind of oozes into the cake. It's just so good. And lots of others. I mean, I make her coleslaw, I make her potato salad, her bread recipe. Her bread recipe is really interesting because, you know, how sourdough is all the rage now, and everybody's always like trying to maintain their sourdough starter. The way her mother made bread was she would use what she called yeast cakes. She would save a little bit of dough from her mix every time she made bread. This she dried and used as her starter. Today we use packaged dry yeast from the store. So I've never seen that before, where you didn't save the starter and keep feeding it the way sourdough. To me just looks like a lot of work. I confess I've never tried to do it, because I don't need enough bread to keep that starter going all the time and having to feed it on a daily basis. But her recipe for bread is really good. And there is now a copy of that at the Auburn branch, so it's available for people to borrow.
It's interesting how cookbooks, they're more than just kind of recipes for food we can cook. They tell us about people's lives and the different times that they lived, or, you know, different things that are trendy or just what's available to them. I also have The Joy of Cooking, which is like old school. I remember my mother had that cookbook. Mm-hmm. No pictures. I mean, just it. And it's the family business now for the family that publishes it, the Rombauer family. It was Irma who started it, I want to say, around the Great Depression, after the death of her husband, and then her children and grandchildren have kept it up. And I just remember as a kid being fascinated because there was a squirrel recipe in there. And I looked it up. I have the library's copy, and there's still, it's in there. It tells you how to dress the squirrel and how to carve it and all of that. And I admit, I'm a pretty adventurous eater, and I'll eat a lot of things, but I've never tried squirrel, and I don't really aspire to, so.
I have friends that have squirrel in their freezer right now, I can guarantee you.
And, wow.
They will make a jambalaya with it, and people just think they're eating dark meat chicken. You know,
like the squirrels we have in our yard, like the,
yes,
the gray guys,
yes.
Or it's a different, wow.
No, the squirrels in our, my friends in West Virginia who I met, they also do this cooking class in, you know, it's a Cajun cooking class that happens in West Virginia, and they always have squirrel in their freezer.
Well, you know, I won't seek it out, but if I was ever someplace and it was there in front of me, you know, when in Rome, and I might try it, but we will see. It has not appeared in front of me yet, so. But if I needed to cook it, Joy of Cooking, that is where you'll find the recipes for it. Among other things as well. They pretty much have everything in there, which is why I liked it when I didn't know how to cook. It's a good gift for, I think, a young adult going out on their own.
But you feel like it's kept up with the way we kind of like cook and eat now?
I, I mean, it has the basics, you know, it's not going to be anything too trend setting. You know, I don't think that, but I think that they have sort of adapted it to different tastes, but they also leave the classic stuff in there and it's just so comprehensive. But yeah, I don't think Joy of Cooking is going to, you know, win any culinary awards for innovation or anything like that. But I sometimes, if there's too many ingredients that are hard to procure, I'm not sure what they are, don't know what to do with them. I like simple sometimes. So it's a classic reference for all kinds of recipes.
So Karen, do you have another one that you'd like to share?
I read cookbooks like the way other people read novels. And except for baking, where you have to be pretty precise, when it comes to other things that I'm cooking, I read cookbooks a lot, but then don't necessarily use the cookbooks at all when I'm cooking because I've just taken bits and pieces from here and there. And so one of the best ones that I know is America's Test Kitchen's What Good Cooks Know, 20 years of test kitchen expertise in one essential handbook. And it's got 300 pages of the rudiments of cooking and then about 100 pages of recipes. So it's got about 150 sort of foundational recipes, their best yellow cake, their best blueberry muffin, you know, their best way to cook a hamburger. But then it also tells you what you need to stock your kitchen and why, and the differences in, you know, knives. Do you want carbon steel? Do you want stainless steel? And then it also talks about ingredients and substitutions. It's just really practical, lots of really good illustrations, step by step. I just opened the book up randomly to a page, which funny for me, it's how to pan roast a chicken breast, but it tells you how to trim, you know, you're trimming the fat and it's, you know, there's a really clear picture of scissors trimming off the rib bone section. And you do that because it allows for more even cooking so the breast can lay flat in the skillet. And it shows step by step what it should look like at each stage of development. A lot of it is black and white illustrations because they can get better views of what they're showing when they're how to cut up a whole chicken, the page I opened to just now. You get it really precise. And then there are lots of photographs as well. I highly recommend this. It's a great sort of a reference book to use. You know, I might not use it for a lot of the recipes, but I use it for that foundational information.
Yeah, it sounds like the best of Test Kitchen in a book, which I love the Test Kitchen show. It's great. And I love that they test everything and tell you the best way to do it. That's why I also love to watch Good Eats when it was on, because he was like, we're going to look at the science. We're going to figure out what the best way to do this is. And then we're going to tell you what that way is.
Right. And the book really reads like the show when you watch it. You know, it's got that same sort of flavor. So if you're familiar with their shows, the book will be right up your alley.
I think I'm going to squeeze my one pick in here while we're still talking about foundational cooking texts and kind of circling back to using kids nonfiction to teach you things. My favorite cookbook is one that we've had as long as I can remember. It's almost as old as I am. It's when Family Fun magazine used to put out
books. Yeah.
So it's the Family Fun's cookbook, 250 irresistible recipes for you and your kids. And it's great because it's like how to do all the basic things, but like if you're just starting out to cook. So we've held on to it because it's like especially like a basic waffle recipe or a basic muffin recipe or some basic thing that it's just like, oh, how do you do that thing? So we've held on to it for all these years so
basic
that we can reference back.
Basic.
So it's like, it's not overly complicated, but it's also not like super juvenile either. It's like things that kids would want to eat, but that also adults would want to eat, you know, trying to make sure everyone gets their vegetables and all that.
What's your favorite recipe from it? Is there a family favorite?
Hold on. There's a lot of like things that were circled. Like puffed popovers is circled in pink highlighter because I think my mom, when she feels like making popovers, goes back to this book and references this recipe to make popovers. pretty much like a zucchini bread. I love a good zucchini bread.
I'm impressed your mom makes popovers.
Occasionally, the mood will strike her that she wants to make popovers. She even bought we have a popover pan somewhere. I think that's kind of like, that's the thing. If you don't have the popover pan, it's really hard to do properly. That is one of those unitaskers that you kind of actually need, because
you can do them in a muffin tin, but they're not the same.
Yeah. I would say even for an adult who doesn't know anything about cooking, to just be like, here, take this. This will get you started. Once you get through this, then you can move on to something like maybe the American Test Kitchen book.
And I do the same thing where I will read a recipe and then kind of use that as inspiration and do my own thing. But the beauty of Cookbook Club is that it's the one time I stick pretty closely to the recipe, or I try to. We all make substitutions, but it kind of gets me to follow it a lot more than I normally would. So
Corey, do you have another cookbook? We'll do two for each of you.
Yeah, so I have... I'm not a vegetarian, but I am trying to, you know, eat fewer animal products and just sort of do that. So I'm sometime vegetarian, and I have one of the Molly Cats, and she does the Moosewood cookbooks. And so this is by her, the Vegetable Dishes I Can't Live Without. And it looks like a Moosewood cookbook where it's just, it almost looks like somebody wrote it in their little notebook, and lots of little illustrations there and drawings, like a beautiful hand-drawn picture of an avocado or a piece of broccoli or all of those different things. So, I think the stir-fried eggplant with ginger plum sauce sounds pretty great, and I'd like to give that a try because I just get in a vegetable rut, and there's only so much just plain steamed broccoli that you want to eat. And there's so much that's in season right now. So the eggplants and the corn and all of that. So we'll see if I come out with anything too exciting from that.
That sounds similar to, I have been eating a lot of caponata lately. I've made gallons of it and put a lot of it in the freezer. And that's a spicy sweet eggplant dish, Sicilian. And that with the spicy plum, that sounds like a similar kind of concept.
I find eggplant extremely challenging. It's delicious, but not usually when I cook it. So I'm going to give it another try. Wish me luck.
I just cooked up 15 pounds of it last weekend.
Wow. That's some eggplant mastery, Karen.
I spent a whole day doing eggplant, and I've got lots of different things in the freezer with it. But I have many other cookbooks sitting here, and I think there are caponata recipes in four of them.
And also, as a vegetarian, I would figure that you would probably cultivate your collection to have a lot of, you know, books that have recipes that you'll eat.
Do you find that you go in phases? So I'll be into something for a while. Lately, it's been a Korean dish, bibimbap, that I have at Ishiban in Cranston, which is a Korean restaurant on Ganta Ave, and it's excellent. And my bibimbap is nowhere near as good as theirs, but I do make it as a vegetarian dish with zucchini and the rice, and then the rice gets pretty crispy on the bottom of the pan. They do it in a special stone dish. But so I've been trying to replicate the bibimbap. It's not exactly the same, but it kind of scratches the itch. I had a phase with a green goddess dressing where I must have made that for a month and put it on everything. So
I love green goddess dressing.
You never know. Oh, it's the best. I love the name. I love the color. I make it with herbs and Greek yogurt. So I learned it from a recipe I did in Cookbook Club.
You'll have to give me that recipe because I think I looked for a recipe online that I didn't really end up liking as much as I liked Panera's. And so I was like, I'm sad. This isn't as good as Panera's is. So to round out our show, we have now reached the last chapter, our final segment, and to keep it on theme with our episode about cookbooks, the question I have for both of you this week is, do you like to find your recipes from cookbooks or from online?
I definitely will look at both. Karen?
I definitely look at both. There are a couple of cooking blogs that I like, and I make a lot of recipes from. Right now on Food 52, one of the eggplant things that I made was a chocolate eggplant cake, which sounds awful, but I've already made it twice since last week, and I've had 4 requests for the recipe.
Wow.
It's like a little chocolate flourless cake. I've made it in muffin tin, so it makes a little tiny cake that, you know, you use really high quality dark chocolate, and it's just fabulous. And it's got pureed eggplant in it, which that's, you know, you steam the eggplant cubes and then you put them on top of chopped chocolate in a blender, and the hot eggplant melts all the chocolate. So I follow Food 52, and the Smitten Kitchen makes a lot of really good vegetarian recipes. So
she has a cookbook too. We did the Smitten Kitchen. That was one of our cookbooks. But, you know, actually, I will say, Taylor, that I'm going to have to vote for cookbooks as what I prefer, because a lot of the food blogs, there's a lot of cutesy anecdotes and stories, and they have to talk about their history with a dish, which is all well and good. But sometimes you just want a recipe, and a lot of the food bloggers have a lot of other stuff to say, and you just want to get straight to the recipe. So I'm going to vote for the cookbook.
Yeah, I mostly do the cookbooks, because on the blogs, those get really tedious. So I'm always finding the button that says jump to the recipe.
I was going to say, a lot of blogs now have the link that's like jump to the recipe. And I'm like, yes, I don't care about why you love making this in the summer and how it reminds you of your uncle. I just want to find out how to make mini cheesecakes.
Yeah. You know, and as someone who's sitting here right now with 14 cookbooks in front of her, because I wasn't sure which way you wanted to jump, I would say that I mostly do use cookbooks.
They're fun to read and look at and hold in your hands.
Yes.
Yeah.
Every library that I've worked at, I have always kind of frequented the cookbook aisle and gotten to know the collections.
Yeah. I do a lot of, you know, searching on Pinterest and finding recipes online, but I also keep going back to cookbooks. And when I was working Cirque, when people would take them out, I would check them in, and then I'd see all these cookbooks, and then I'd want to take them home. So yeah, there's something about it. I think it's partially the pictures. For me anyway, it's like just to flip through it and look at all these pictures of fabulous food is just
I had a colleague at a previous library job. We would work together a lot, and he would have cookbooks, and he would look at them for his wife, and she only wanted cookbooks that had pictures. So if it didn't have pictures, he'd say, oh, she won't like this one, but he would look through them and bring them. And you know, I think there's something to that, because I really like to see a picture too.
Yeah, me too. I have a couple of patrons at Auburn that I think have set up preferred searches so that they get notifications whenever any new cookbook is added anywhere in the state, because they both get multiple cookbooks every single week. So I see this vast number of cookbooks coming through the building. And several of the ones that I have sitting here in front of me, I have bought because I saw them when they came through for those patrons, and I liked them enough to actually buy a copy for myself, you know, not just have it at the library, but to have it available at home in case the mood strikes, you know.
Well, I'm sorry that we weren't able to get to all of your picks. And I don't know, Corey, if you had some other picks standing by, maybe we'll have to do a part 2 and we'll get to some more. But thank you both for being on the show. And thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been another episode of Downtime.
Downtime is a production of the Cranston Public Library. Our theme music is Day Trips by Ketza, and our ad music is Happy Ukulele by Scott Holmes. Links to the books and movies discussed can be found in the show notes. To find out everything your library can do for you, visit our website at cranstonlibrary.org. Downtime with Cranston Public Library is on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else you find your podcasts. Subscribe so you never miss an episode. Join us next week for more Downtime.